This is our Middle East Hour when we really dive into Middle East issues, trying to get you to become a better informed American citizen and a better informed radio talk listener so you can understand in a much more informed and enlightened way what exactly is going on in the Middle East. And to help us do that now is Trevor Legasic, professor of Arabic literature at the Department of Near East Studies at the University of Michigan. Trevor, thanks for being with us today on the Todd Feinberg Show.
Pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
You are a, well, I know, you're a literature scholar, right? You study You study Arab literature, and you are a translator, too. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, we use the word Arab for the people and Arabic for the language, so it's Arabic language. Arabic
Thank you.
Literature.
Thank you for straightening me out.
All right.
Talk to us, then, about... about this language and this literature and this culture and the history that you know so much about and we know so little. And I know I'm approaching this very broadly, but I'm hoping that if I just throw you the ball that you have stuff you want to say that will help us understand some of the larger issues we don't understand about the Arab world.
Regarding the language, obviously it's an extraordinarily complex language to understand. There are many... issues of finesse in expression in Arabic that make the culture difficult to approach and to understand.
Why is that? Is it just, is it intellectually on such a different realm that does that impact the way the mind thinks? I mean, is there that kind of fundamental difference between our cultures?
Well, there is a spoken language, you see, and there's a written language. And at times they coincide and at times they do not. And the spoken languages differ from place to place in the Arab world. So when they communicate with one another, they try to mutually use an intellectual lingua franca kind of language, which is the language in which they write the newspapers and so forth.
So the written word is universalized, if there is such a thing, and the spoken word is idiosyncratic based on region?
Yes, it's based on region, and of course it's dependent upon local vocabulary items and then intonation patterns, which makes it very difficult to follow by one group. That is.
But do you see roots in the literature and in the language of our lack of understanding of one another? Is there a cause and effect there that you can see in terms of the gulf between our cultures?
Well, of course, it's a very long history to try to deal with very rapidly. It's to do, essentially, of course, with misunderstanding, misappreciation of one another's cultures, our denial of the validity of Islam, and their sense of denial of the essentials of the Christian faith, their acceptance of Judaism and Christianity in some ways and in some degrees, and their rejection of them in some ways.
Can you address that a little bit?
Well, their insistence, of course, Muslims insist that they receive the prophetic message from God last, and that it's surprising that everyone else hasn't simply accepted that message. And therefore, they have always somewhat resented the failure of Christians and Jews to accept Islam. And they have no doubts, of course, that Islam is the latest and best version of the truth to descend to man from God.
Is there anything inherent, though, in that belief system, other than incomprehension over everybody else's lack of acceptance? Is there anything inherent in the Islamic belief system that makes one unable to coexist with those who have different beliefs?
Not as far as I'm aware, no. There is very little in the holy book of Islam, the Quran, delivered verbatim to the Prophet Muhammad by the angel Gabriel, of course. There's very little in that work which is offensive to Jews or Christians.
And in fact, do we have examples of the religions being able to coexist, of Jews and Christians living with great acceptance amongst Islam? Do you have examples in literature where it's portrayed in a way that's quite favorable?
Oh, indeed, yes. Throughout Arabic literary history, there was very close contact between particularly Jewish and Arab Muslim inhabitants of the same environments, the same cities, towns, and villages, and they cooperated together in literary affairs. They enjoyed mutual respect. Jews had synagogues, Muslims had mosques, and apart from occasional problems that arose between the communities, they lived in relatively good harmony, especially, of course, in Spain, for very many hundreds of years.
I address this because you hear, you know, there's just this desire, I guess, whenever you have a problem with another culture to just want to look at them and say they're bad, you know? And we have comments from different kinds of leaders in this country that carry overtones of this kind of prejudice, where it's just easy to put other people in an ugly box and say, well, the problem is, you know, that Islam is a bloody religion, or, you know, things that are just ridiculous statements, but coming from people with enough authority to reinforce the worst kind of assumptions that people might make.
Well, I agree with you, but of course it comes from ignorance and prejudice. These people are not properly engaged in the study and acceptance of the Middle East and the Arab peoples, as they should be, of course, in their positions.
What is it that drives you about, I mean, you've made your life studying this. Where's the beauty in it for you? Where's the power in diving into this culture the way you have?
Well, my enjoyment of Arab culture comes, of course, through many visits to the area over many years, the friendships I've established, and, of course, through the readings that I've made in the literature.
Yeah, but what about that literature? What is it that strikes a chord?
Once it gets appreciated, then it becomes as if you or I were within that culture in those environments, expressing our thoughts and feelings about our environment and about the problems which we face. So the wonderful thing about literature in translation is that it enables one to merge oneself effectively within the culture of the other, in a way, of course, that one can't do any other
way. I ask you the questions about where you get your inspiration from, Trevor, where the delight comes from, because in my limited travels to the region, I've just been fascinating with what wonderful people I meet and what a nice feeling they have as people. You know, you just sense this goodness and serenity and security about them. You get a feeling that there's something fundamentally different about their lives that in some ways improves them as people over those who grow up in our culture.
Well, I'm very interested and delighted to hear you say that, because your experiences were very similar to my own. It's very difficult to understand or appreciate Arab culture from the outside, especially through political science works, history works, and political commentary that we hear. You really need to go to the Arab world to make initial friendships, and then you realize the ways in which the media and the political science texts and so forth have distorted the realities of the Arab world. The Arabs are people with great humor, very welcoming, extraordinarily hospitable, nice people to know once you are in their environment and they begin to accept you. And this is one of the reasons why I went into literature, is because I felt that through literature one could perhaps convey something of the inner qualities and the strengths of Arab society.
But that's why I'm asking you the questions, and perhaps I front-loaded with two broad questions at the beginning of the interview, but I'm looking for an answer myself. What is it about the background of, for example, the Omani people who I met and just loved, and I just had this strong feeling of how nice their lives are and how content they are. And the average American would look at them and say, oh, my God, you know, they're living in primitive conditions. And as a matter of fact, I spent a night in the desert at there's sort of an outdoor hotel, you know, where you can camp out in the desert. And I spent a night there, and then we went to visit a Bedouin family the next day. And afterwards, I said to Mike, I was just enthralled with the people. They were just so sweet. And I said to our guide, are these people living in poverty? And he said, well, it depends on how you define poverty, I guess. If you were to look at what their income is each year, the world would define that as impoverished. But if you really examined their lives, you'd find they're living in great richness. And that kind of thing is hard for somebody in this country to understand. And that's what I'm really looking for you to address in terms of what you've learned in literature, is how did they get the way they are, and you know, what's the difference in their backgrounds and their culture from us that we might be able to learn something from?
Well, it's partly to do with the very nature of Islam, and the essential message, of course, of it is that life as we know it exists as a result of the will of God, and that good Muslims accept their environment. Therefore, the desire for material goods that are not easily accessible to them, the desire for material progress, advancement, have been slow to develop in the Arab world and are still nothing like as supreme in terms of values as they are in our own Western culture.
But that's a good thought, but I think it's just the beginning of it. But, you know, I meet people, even religious people in this country, who have that kind of total acceptance that you've described, and it doesn't always feel as pure and as solid and as gentle at the same time as the Arabs I've met seem to be. They seem so positive and comfortable in their belief about their religion that there's not even a belief stage. You know, there's not a conscious stage. It's just who they are and what their lives are.
Right. It's part of the mass of values that constitute Arab and Muslim culture, to be accepting of one's own lot, one's own position, and of everyone else, to be relaxed in terms of criticizing others, not to do that, not to talk badly about others, simply to accept life as it is and enjoy it as a gift, and to progress in the faith with good values. Essentially what it seems to amount to.
But there's also what I'm driving at is I had a conversation with a Saudi who I met, who I got comfortable enough with to talk honestly about religion, and I asked him what if questions about his religion. Well, what if what you believe isn't true? And he said, no, you don't understand. It just is.
Yeah.
There's no conversation to have about whether it's true or not. This is what is. And I realized that there was something fundamentally different here structurally, you know. He could not get his mind over the wall to evaluate his beliefs in that way. That's where I say there wasn't conscious mind involved. It just is totally what is. And I don't feel like we have that in this country about anything.
No, I think you're right. But it would be wrong, of course, to assume that the attitude that you just described is universal in the Middle East. There are, of course, many angry intellectuals out there in the Arab world, and many who have rejected the values of Islam in the late 19th century and into the 20th century. Existentialism, of course, is part of the intellectual scene of the Arab world and has been for a century. So it's not a simple picture by any means, and one can't talk about Arab qualities and Arab lifestyles as a kind of, and values as a kind of universal.
Trevor Legasic with us from the University of Michigan, a professor of Arabic literature at the University of Michigan since 1966. Is that accurate? That's a long time.
It does seem a long time, doesn't it, when you say the number?
I guess that's real then. You translate stuff, I presume, from Arabic into English?
Yes.
And you did a book called The Secret Life of Said?
Yes, that is one of those that I've translated, yes.
Are there lessons in books like this that are valuable, or is it just a matter of taking a classic from one language and moving it into another so others can have access? Is there some reason for us to go out and read this stuff?
Well, this particular book is extraordinarily important, it seems to me, to have available in English at this time. And there is quite a large readership developing for it. Because, of course, it shows what it's like to be an Arab Christian born and bred in Palestine and become absorbed into the state of Israel. So it's very topical in that sense of displaying what it's like to be an Israeli Arab. And, of course, it gets to the fundamental issues of the problems between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
And what are those fundamental problems? Are those cultural, religious, language, historical? What are they?
Well, they come back ultimately to the ways in which Israel was created as a state, contrary to the desires of the Arab Palestinians, both Muslim and Christian, the fact that their wishes were completely overruled by the external community, and they were faced with a fait accompli of either living within the borders of a Jewish state or else excluded from their homelands, in which they had been, of course, in very many cases, born and brought up.
What you're describing then is an untenable situation that was designed for failure.
I'm afraid it was. That's the way I look back at the history. And, of course, if you go back into the history of the 40s and the 30s, when the creation of the state was being discussed all over the world, there were very many people in high positions and in important roles who understood that this would be a very difficult enterprise indeed, and might indeed prove to be as bad a failure as it has turned out.
Is there any way that you can see any gems of knowledge that you've acquired from this study of literature that would indicate that there's some way out of this mess between Israel and the Palestinians?
Well, there has been talk, as you know, in Geneva of a negotiated settlement in which Israeli intellectuals and some officials and Palestinians have engaged, and clearly they come to a close call to an agreement which should be acceptable to their sides, both their sides, and to us as Americans and to the rest of the world. The issue, of course, is the borders and the compensation and perhaps repatriation for the Arab refugees from Palestine. These issues must be solved. They must be negotiated and solved.
So you're hopeful from what you're seeing happening in Geneva now? That
I wish I were hopeful. However, I've been hopeful before. And it all depends, of course, upon the wisdom of leaders, both in the Arab world and outside, as to whether progress moves forward to some kind of reconciliation. Reconciliation is, of course, possible between people of goodwill.